Hi, this is John Udell, and in today's podcast, I interview Tim Howes, CTO of Opsware. Tim was a driving force in the development of the LDAP directory protocol back in the late 90s when he was CTO of Netscape's Server Products division. In 1999, he co-founded LoudCloud, a managed services and hosting company, which in 2002 rebranded as Opsware. Today, Opsware focuses on selling software that automates the management and deployment of Unix, Linux, and Windows systems. To make that job easier, the company has developed a new feature called the Opsware Global Shell, and that's the focus of today's interview.
So I won't spend a lot of time on slide four, which sort of discusses the evolution of management tools. I think you've got a good grasp of that, just to say that, you know, shells are kind of stuck at where they were 30 years ago. Users of shells. I'm certainly a user of shells every day. I'm excited about having, you know, better history and command substitution and whatnot, but...
like 3 decades, you think we could
exactly.
Do a little more than that.
So you're really talking about the edges, improving the edges there. So, and I think, you know, you also probably have a good grasp of slide five, just why it is people still spend a lot of their time in shells, and just something that Microsoft may have actually seemed to grasp lately with their introduction of the Monad shell, Microsoft shell.
Yeah, I've actually looked into that thing in some detail.
And, yeah, what do you think?
I think it's extremely cool. As a matter of fact, I wrote a little sort of tutorial on some use cases for Monad, and it's every time Monad is in the news like it is now, because I guess somebody... wrote a virus for it. That page of mine starts to get a lot of traffic. So yeah, I think it's one of the cooler things that I've seen come out of Microsoft.
I think they've really done a good job of, because it seems, you know, it's got the same kind of power that you have in regular Unix shell, but really kind of expanded because they've taken advantage of the Microsoft object model.
Yeah, I mean, object pipeline, yeah. What's not to like, right? Everybody immediately gets that, you know, and there's a certain amount of not invented here envy coming from the, you know, Unix side of the world, but hey, too bad, right? I mean, it was great that they pushed this forward, I think, and I'm hoping to see, although I haven't yet seen, maybe you have, some kind of response from the open source Linux, Unix world.
Yeah, I haven't yet either, but I'm pretty sure it's coming.
Right. Of course, it's gated by the more primitive application model on that side of the world.
Yeah, they
although
don't
I think
same.
That web services is kind of leveling that out at this point. But right, I mean, this is why Miguel de Casa has had such an interesting challenge. Is to I don't think anyone else but him could have gone into that community and said, "We suck when it comes to components and reuse, right?" And this is why I'm going to do this thing. I mean, there's just literally no one else that could have pulled off a political coup of that magnitude.
Yeah,
right?
I agree. It's very cool technology. I think now we've spent a little bit of time talking to Jeffrey Snover, who's an architect. He's a very smart guy. He's really done a good job on it.
Yes.
So.
Well, perhaps, and I don't want to put words in your mouth here, but perhaps what you're going for here is indeed some kind of generalization of that model to, you know, across...
Well, a little bit different than that. I actually think they're pretty complementary. I think, you know, we've actually been looking into this, but when Microsoft Shell ships, we would see it as another shell on top of what we've developed that would bring a lot of the same benefits to Monad that... that are missing.
Okay, so we should go through what your thing is then.
So and actually, if you look at slide six, starts to talk about sort of the things that we think are kind of missing evolution wise. And one of those things which we don't really talk about here is the the advantages that you bring from an object model pipeline as opposed to a just text based pipeline where you're doing awk and sed and grep and stuff.
Yeah.
But in addition to those things, which I think are, more difficult, as we discussed a minute ago, to get on Unix because of the lack of underlying application model. I think you also need in a shell this concept of leverage. You know, shells can pretty much do things one at a time today, and to have more native support for being able to operate across multiple systems, which, people do today by hacking together. I can SSH onto this box and, telnet onto this one and SCP over there. Mm-hmm. But it's not really native. They're by separate commands, and I think there's a lot of power that could be gained by making them more native. Reach. So again, you know, being able to have a single shell that actually works across platforms, across all your data centers, into every corner of your enterprise, I think would be very powerful. And today, you know, how do people do that? Well, again, they're sort of hacking together the fact that they can, you know, use the network to get onto other boxes, but, you know, once they're there, the commands are different. And
well, but so if I put Cygwin on a Windows box like I always do, mm-hmm. how would what you would be doing be more, quote-unquote, native than that would be?
Well, so, one, you have to get Cygwin on the box, and two...
But you have to get your thing on the box, too, right?
No, well, actually, so you need to get the OpsWare agent on the box, but that's a much smaller task than involving, than installing the, you know, 300 megs worth of Cygwin on your Windows box. The other thing is it's a different, so we're not talking about a shell that we actually deploy to every box out there. We're talking about a single centralized shell where you can use whatever shell you want, Bash, K-shell, whatever.
Okay.
And then we sort of, by virtue of this underlying virtual file system technology, allow you to, from that centralized shell, access, manage, manipulate the file systems and execution environments on all of the machines that you're managing.
Okay, so central controller distributed agents.
That's
and
right.
And the agents
yeah.
are relatively lightweight, more like mm-hmm. communication channels through which you leverage the local resources as they
exactly.
sit on the box.
Exactly.
Okay.
And the other thing that we bring to the table is the ability to organize all of those resources. So we have in OpsWare, this thing we call the OpsWare data model, which organizes all of your resources by location, by facility, by, operating system, by patch level, by software installed, by service level, all kinds of different dimensions upon which it's organized. And then we've been able to reflect that organization in the file system itself, so you can more easily, you know, get to the machines that you want and sort of filter out the ones that you don't. And the other benefit of doing this, this more centralized approach, centralized distributed agent approach, is that we get much better security and auditability. So everything you're doing goes through the centralized OpsWare shell.
Uh-huh.
And so it starts to explain a little bit of what's going on slide 7, where you know, there's sort of three levels to think about. There's the top level where you can really use any shell you want. So, you know, you can use Bash, you can use TCSH, whatever. Those shells, the reason you can do that is because the actual work that we've done is in the middle layer there, the virtual file system, which, you know, through use of this agents installed in the boxes and the management network that we have in OpsWare, is able to reflect up to these shells all of the underlying distributed file systems of those individual machines. They all appear as part of a single global file system.
Okay. But so from a management perspective, if we're going across from Unix to Windows, then we're also switching methodologies, really, from a file system configuration methodology to a registry methodology. So are you abstracting that difference as well?
We are, yes. So you can actually access the registry through the file system.
It gets as in Monad, as a matter of fact. Okay.
Yeah. And we'll do similar things with, you know, there's other information stores on Windows as well, like, you know, Metabase and so on.
Okay.
And so that's why I say, like, when Monad comes along, it can join these other shells on, you know, at the top level there. And can give you access to, you know, certainly all the things on Windows, obviously.
Right.
Although Monad itself doesn't come out of the box, certainly not today, with the reach. It doesn't allow you to go kind of cross, device, operate on, multiple devices at a time.
Okay. And we can but in some respects, you're duplicating things that Monad will be doing, like the file system view of the registry.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Yeah. Now, in the case of, you know, if you're using Monad, like, we have very little work to do to duplicate that. It's really just sort of gluing together what they do on both ends.
Okay.
But we can also give Monad users access to Linux file systems as well, which is not something that they're going to get from Microsoft.
Understood. Okay. So, okay. Got it.
So then the other half of the virtual file system on the left there that's reflected is this OpsWare data model. So, you know, all of the information that you keep in the OpsWare data model, we reflect in the file system as, you know, a set of files and directories that you can use to help organize your your servers. And if you go on to the next slide, it just gives you a little bit more lower level detail of how it actually works. So, you know, when you get right down to it, every server appears as a directory somewhere in the file system.
Okay.
You know, you CD into one of those directories, you have, two things. One is you have access to, in the example presented here, you have access to the files. You CD into there, you actually see the root file system, and, you know, you go onto that machine and can manipulate files. You see the registry, on Windows. You have this info file, which contains, information about hardware, software, network information, and so on that,
okay.
that Opsware keeps about.
So the way this gets built is I install the agent on a box, and it starts talking to the central thing, and it relays back up to it all the stuff that it needs to sort of initially populate that view, and then I guess there's change detection going on and updating
Correct.
And things like that.
Exactly.
Okay.
Yeah. And the other thing is, so it's not simply access to the file system and registry objects themselves. You can also, we think of it as sort of jumping through the looking glass where, you know, you can execute programs on those remote machines. So you actually have access to the execution context of the remote machines as well. So, you know, certainly if you want to diff to files or do something like that, you don't need that. But if you want to get a process list off those machines, you need to be able to jump through that looking glass to be able to do it.
Meaning shipping commands over to the other side.
Exactly. And executing those.
Or executing
commands.
Them. Okay,
and
so
when you do that,
okay.
of course, those commands are, you know, in the native format of the local execution environment.
Yeah. Okay. Okay.
So,
and is the protocol spoken between the agent and the central server? Is that an open kind of thing, or what does it look like?
So that is over the Opsware secure management network. So, you know, it's basically speaking mostly XML RPC over SSL.
It really is XML RPC?
It really is XML RPC, yeah.
Wow.
So there's some other stuff that we do that's not quite XML RPC to, you know, stream things and things that XML RPC isn't quite good at.
So why wouldn't it, in this day and age, be a SOAP protocol?
I mean, I think it's are you saying why
at this point, you know, I mean, a lot of people would be thinking, you know, these kinds of things tend to look like web services nowadays, and then
I could
intermediate it with other stuff if I needed to, right? I could, you know, assert policy over it in my own ways if I wanted to, blah, blah, blah.
Yeah, yeah. So the basic answer is that when we started doing it, you know, the world was more XML RPC. It was quite some time ago that
yeah.
we installed the initial stuff. So I think we'll move, you know, more to web services. Certainly if you go back to the Opsware core, like the interface that we expose to outside programs that want to access this is full web services API.
Right.
We just haven't, like, upgraded all of the internal communication components.
And I guess the short answer to my question would be nobody asked you to.
I mean, mostly what people want is not sort of direct access to, you know, individual agents. What they want is access to the Opsware core to make those agents do whatever they want, and that's what we have actually exported in web services.
Oh, you do? Okay, so what are the kinds of facilities that are exposed there?
So all kinds of APIs, a lot of APIs to get access to the Opsware data model.
Yeah.
So, you know, give me a list of servers that have this patch installed, all those kinds of things. And then also web services APIs to invoke certain actions on the objects that you get back. So, you know, you can cause a patch to be installed, you can cause a piece of software to be installed, you can invoke access to a program, you know, remote program on that running down on the machine hosting the agent and get some results back.
Is there a query interface over the data model, or is it more like navigation, programmatic kind of access?
A little bit of both. You can do both, basically.
So what would the query method or style be?
So the query method, it's not like we haven't exposed, you know, a SQL-like or, you know, whatever the web services equivalent would be, but we have exposed web services API calls that allow you to, you know, create filters and, you know, select the objects that you're interested in.
Okay, so like WS, you know, web services calls with maybe XPath qualifiers, things
yeah,
like that.
Yeah, that kind of stuff.
Okay,
yeah.
Okay.
Okay, so I think, you know, no surprise on slide 9, just sort of how this makes an SA's job easier. I won't go into a lot of detail, but, you know, you can imagine you want to do something across you want to do something to one machine, well, it's not that big an advantage. If you want to do something to 10 machines, very big advantage to be able to do it, you know, all at once from a single window as opposed to having to pop up 10 windows. The other significant advantage is of the cross-platform is, you know, there's some things like if you want to learn everything about, you know, you've ordered a bunch of Dell machines, you've got them deployed across some Windows, some Linux, well, maybe you want to know something about the hardware itself, ROM version or something. You can get that easily without, you know, having to know both Windows and Linux, so it definitely cuts down the time there.
So that'd look like the same neutral API call to either flavor of box from the perspective of the central thing, which is talking to these agents.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. And the other good thing about making this use of this virtual file system is that, you know, for the most part, the scripts that people have already written, well, they're just going to work. If they want to modify those scripts to now take advantage of, you know, instead of working across one machine, work across, you know, 10, 100, 1,000, pretty easy to modify them, you know, with a little loop that makes them work across that, you know, that range of machines.
Right.
So,
although there is the question about what gets run locally on the central site and what gets our exact out there at the leaves, right?
That's true. You have, so, you know, you can't take a script that you've written for Linux, you know, that would work certainly locally on a Linux machine. You can't take that and, you know, make it work on a Windows machine. Right, so there are definitely differences there.
Yeah, no, but I mean, you also wouldn't want to take a script that was munging a whole pile of data locally and necessarily redirect that munging through the VFS, would you? Right.
For performance reasons?
Yeah, right.
Yeah,
that's
true. You do need to pay attention to those kinds of things to make sure you get the performance that you want. But, you know, I think the main point is just the learning curve for people is much, much lower. The compatibility curve as well. So, you know, the way people have sometimes tried to approach this problem in the past is like a new command set or hacked commands that, you know about the fact that there's multiple servers out there, which gives you this big compatibility problem. You know, when the next version of those commands come out, well, you've got to hack them again. And so, you know, our approach doesn't have that problem. It's sort of transparent to those commands.
Yeah, that sounds good. Now, obviously, these agents would be hacker's dream if they could get to them, so I'm sure you've worried a lot about that.
Yeah, security is definitely a big issue. So in general, the design of the OpsWare system is the agent itself. You know, each agent out there has its own certificate, its own security credentials that it uses to talk to the OpsWare core.
Mm-hmm.
If you do compromise one agent's credentials, you know, you can do things to that agent and that box on which the agent runs, but that's really all you can do. So the core fundamentally does not trust the agents that are out there.
Right. So I guess I should have asked this up front, but there's not a necessary relationship between this product and the flagship product, i.e., you know, the flagship product, if it had deployed instances of Linux or Windows out to various boxes, then this Global Shell could work with those boxes, but it could also work with other boxes that hadn't been deployed by OpsWare by just adding the agent to them. Is that correct?
That's correct.
Okay.
And that's actually true of other features in OpsWare as well. OpsWare, even to do, you know, patching or software distribution, we don't have to have built the box. In fact, most of our customers, you know, unleash OpsWare across a bunch of machines they already have just by installing the agent, and then OpsWare can sort of take inventory and know where it is and start doing all the things that it does.
Well, so you've already had, I didn't realize this, you've already had a version of this agent technology in the existing product for inventorying and asset management and things like that.
Yes, absolutely.
Okay, yeah. Okay, so this builds on that.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
So the last thing I just want to highlight is the security and auditability aspects.
Mm-hmm.
You know, as you know, I'm sure with conventional shells, very distributed, you know, you've got different, you know, maybe you're using some kind of more centralized security mechanism, but often you're not, so you've got sort of distributed user permissions.
Mm-hmm.
There's really no auditing, you know. Usually people might be able to tell when you logged into the box and when you logged out, but other than that, they have no idea what you did.
Mm-hmm.
Communications might be over SSH, but they also might be over Telnet, or you might be, you know, accessing files over NFS. In general, it's just this big backdoor that people can use to do, you know, God only knows what when they administrate the boxes, as opposed to with the OpsWare Global Shell, you now have centralized access control. So, you know, if you need to cut off somebody's access, there's one place to do it. You've got a centralized database where you can store secure audit trails. So I know, you know, who did what, not only when they logged in, but actually what they did, you know, every command by command, the results of those commands, we store all of that.
Right.
The communication between your terminal and the agents themselves is SSL secured, encrypted. And we find that customers tend to use this to really shut down some of that backdoor administration. So they tend to, you know, remove some of the privileged accounts from the end machines, or at least not give people those passwords,
mm-hmm.
funnel them through Opsware so that now they can really track what's going on.
Right.
And, you know, it's obviously a big benefit to compliance. The great thing is, though, I mean, not only is it so, you know, management likes it, but also the administrators like it because it's just much more convenient for them to than, you know, having to pop up a window on the 12 machines that they manage and switch between them all. They can, you know, just have a single window or set of windows that that they manage those machines through the Opsware shell.
Right.
So that's basically the that's basically what it does. You know, cross-platform mass execution. It allows people to use all the scripts and, you know, things, the shells that they know and love. And the key technology is this virtual file system, which rides on top of the Opsware agent technology and the whole Opsware management network.
So what's required to run it? When's it available? And what's it going to cost?
It's available now as part of the 5.1 release, which is what's currently available to customers.
Okay.
And there's no extra charge. It's just built in as part of the product.
Oh, okay.
Thanks, Tim. It's always interesting to hear about technologies that make it easier to work with heterogeneous systems. It sounds like the global shell is another step in that direction.